You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hainaut Baba. Over the past couple of years, there have been many conversations about allyship, how people can support one another in their struggles, especially white people, and what role they could or should play in supporting people of color on issues related to discrimination, police violence, or marginalization. But sometimes that conversation can be complicated, and people are not clear about what the boundaries are to being involved. Well-meaning people may end up offending others. That's where Rahula Janowski comes in. She's part of Catalyst Project in San Francisco, and she's worked for years training people on how to be effective and respectful allies. She joins me in studio. What is the Catalyst Project?
The Catalyst Project is an organization that seeks to build movements towards collective liberation through supporting people of color-led organizations and movements and working with white people in that movement to help build their anti-racism. We do that in a variety of ways. We do trainings. We do direct support for organizations of primarily white folks who are doing social justice work to help develop anti-racist practices and analysis and skills.
Mm. Yeah. What does collective liberation mean?
Collective liberation is a term initially coined by bell hooks, and it essentially means that we don't get there unless we all get there together, that all of the different struggles against oppression and against systems of power are linked and tied together. And so we're not just looking for an end to racism, we're also looking for an end to sexism and an end to ableism and basically towards a world where we all get to be our full selves and have access to the world.
Hmm. And you work with primarily white people?
Well, not exactly. We do training and developmental support primarily with white folks, but we also do a lot of work in solidarity with organizations led by people of color in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What kind of trainings are they?
Well, we have a one-day training that's called Anti-Racism for Collective Liberation, where we take folks through what the history of white supremacy in the United States is. And when we're talking about white supremacy, we're not just talking about the white supremacists, like the Nazis and the alt-right and those folks. We're talking about a system that's been in place since the founding of this country. And so we take folks through things like, one example that sometimes folks don't know about is the GI Bill, which helped bring a lot of people from like the working class to the middle class, was only available to white soldiers.
Hmm.
So that lifted white families and white communities out of like into the middle class, but it wasn't available to people of color who'd served in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many examples like that. And then we also, we go through like how that lands on those of us who are white, how we get kind of cultured and trained to think and act in certain ways, and how that plays out when we step into social justice work, particularly when we step into social justice work with people of color. And then we talk about some of the skills and ways that you work with that as a white person trying to do good. Yeah.
So somebody who is white comes to your training and starts to learn about the history they don't know about, the realities they don't know about. What are some of the reactions that you've heard?
Well, it can be pretty intense for people.
Hmm.
We do a piece where we ask folks, to share, like, what do you know of the history of land theft in this country? And we all know a little bit about things, but when we put it all together, it's kind of a devastating picture. And I think for some folks to really look at, for those of us who are white, like, we've benefited from all of these systems, even though most of us haven't had a direct hand in it. And I think that can be really heavy for some people. But we're really interested in, we want people to recognize that reality and grapple with it. And we also want people to be motivated by it, not disabled by it.
Hmm.
So we don't want people to go into shame spirals and be like, oh God, it's all so terrible. Like, yes, it is terrible. And we have a role to play in changing it.
Because that can happen, the shame spirals?
Sure. I think we put a lot of thought and practice into making sure that's not what people leave our work with. But it's definitely out there. I think that definitely sometimes folks are like, it's too much. I can't grapple with that, so I'm just going to step aside. And we don't want people to step aside.
Hmm. What's the difference between the person who leaves and the person who stays? How do you convince them? Like, what do you say?
Oh, well, with our work, usually when people come to Catalyst, like come to a training, or we also have like a longer in-depth training that's like a 4-month process. And usually when people come,
that's quite a commitment.
It
is a big commitment, yeah. So folks are already committed. Mm-hmm. Usually when folks come to even the one-day training, they already are committed to anti-racism. And really, for white folks, a lot of times we can be committed, and yet we're still bringing our white privilege with us, and it's splashing all over all the people we're working with. And so showing up committed doesn't mean that you actually know how to do it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
I was looking on your website. There's this photo of a man holding up a sign that says, "White people, what will we do to change our legacy of violence?" And another one, like a quote from your website, "What would be possible if masses of white people resisted racism alongside people of color?" And I want to talk about that alongside, this conversation about being an ally,
yeah.
and allyship. What does it look like?
So when I think about allyship, I think about solidarity, which is the idea that what happens to you impacts me. And it does tie in with the collective liberation idea again, too, that our futures are all bound up in each other and our struggles are bound up in each other. And that as someone with a certain amount of privilege, it's kind of my responsibility, like that piece about like what will we do to end the legacy of violence? Like we have benefited from it. So we have an extra responsibility, I think, to respond to it and work to change things. And so being an ally, it means like standing in solidarity with people, recognizing that your liberation is tied up in their liberation, but also there's an important piece there for folks showing up with privilege to look to the leadership of the people most impacted by the system of oppression that you're looking at. So being an ally isn't showing up and being like, here's what we should do. Being an ally is showing up and being like, what can I do? How can I be helpful?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who can be an ally? What is the criteria, if anything? Like, is it anybody?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I think anyone can be an ally. I think the important thing to remember, though, is that ally is not an identity.
Mm-hmm.
It's an action.
It's a verb.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not really a verb, but it's a verb.
Exactly. We talk about it like it's a noun, but uh-huh. but the practice of being an ally is to do things. And so I think anybody who wants to support people's struggles and wants to like lend their support, whatever that looks like, to other people's struggles and to see that link and to know that their liberation depends on that. That's, so it's not something only white people can do. It's not something only straight people can do. It's something that we all can do. I think that the more privileges you have, the more of a responsibility you have to step into that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want us to hear this clip. There are, like I said, there's a lot of people talking about allyship, a lot of people of color, about how to do it right,
mm-hmm.
what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say. This is a clip by media personality Francesca Ramsey. 5 tips on how to be an ally.
Understand your privilege. Now, a lot of people get hung up on the word privilege, so let me break it down for you nice and easy. Privilege does not mean that you are rich, that you've had an easy life. All it means is that there are some things in life that you will not experience or ever have to think about just because of who you are. An ally's job is to support. You want to make sure that you use your privilege and your voice to educate others, but make sure to do it in such a way that does not speak over the community members that you're trying to support or take credit for things that they are already saying. This isn't Mario Kart. Stay in your
So she says things like, know your privilege, stay in your lane. She says, if you imagine yourself as Destiny's Child, you are not Beyonce, you are Michelle. You can't be the lead singer in the group. Do you agree with these? And at the same time, are there more, like some basic principles, some basic things of, mm-hmm. how to be a successful ally and respectful
mm-hmm.
of the oppressed or marginalized group as well?
Yeah. Well, I love Francesca's points. She's great. I definitely, that point about know your privilege is key. Because without being aware of the privilege that we're walking in and carrying with us, we can do a lot of harm. Like one of the things that I think is key for being an ally is to remember that impact matters more than intent. And so if you're stepping into a situation to help, and because you're not being conscious of how your privilege is playing out in your interactions with people, if you end up causing harm to somebody, it doesn't matter that your intentions were good. It matters for you, but it doesn't matter as far as the outcome. And so for folks who are working in solidarity, who are being allies, being aware of that, and if you do harm when you mean to do well, to take responsibility and not fall into like, well, but I meant something else, but to actually figure out how to address the harm, ask what happened, ask how you can fix it, and then take those steps. And then a really key thing is to keep moving. You know, I talked before about like not going into shame spirals. Sometimes when you make a mistake, like, and it's a mistake that's based on your internalized racism or like the way your privilege is playing out, it can feel, I think a really easy way is to sort of flounce, is to be like, well, I'm not needed here, and to sort of just remove yourself from the situation rather than deal with the pain that comes along with being accountable. But accountability is another one of the key things about being an ally, is actually you are accountable to the people who you are seeking to be in solidarity with, which means if they say, actually, what you're doing is not what we need, and you're sure that's what they need, it doesn't matter that you're sure. What matters is what they're asking for. Mm-hmm. And if you say that you're going to do something, you follow through on it. And if you mess up, you make amends and then continue to build relationship.
Does solidarity and allyship mean I show up at the rallies, I show up at the protests with my signs, I'm on social media, I say the right things? Is that all? Or... because there's this other argument that are you an ally, like a political ally, when it's time to show up, you're there? Or are you, you know, do you have personal relationships with people of color? Do you have one-on-one daily interactions with people of color? Do you have friends or family? You know, there's a difference between the two. Is it, which is it? Or is it both?
I think it's both. I think it's both, and it's probably a lot more than that. One thing that I try to keep in mind is that there's so many factors that impact what we can and can't do. Like people with small children have less capacity to get out there and go to protests and maybe mostly engaging in personal conversations or online conversations. Other people have a lot more capacity to get out and do stuff. And so that's always good to remember. And then I think relationships are key. If you don't have relationships, you can't have accountability. So as organizations, like Catalyst is very pro-organization, we think it's a great place to do work from is if you're in an organization, because an organization helps keep you accountable. Mm-hmm. And also organizations can have relationships with other organizations and have accountability relationships there. And so that's part of what we do. We have relationships with a lot of organizations to whom we, you know, we're in relationship. And so there's accountability. There's, you know, a lot of exchange of ideas and leadership.
Is it challenging? What's challenging about those relationships?
I think that what's challenging? I mean, honestly, right now things are so challenging just because the environment we're in, that some of the stuff that in other times might be challenging, like interpersonal kind of stuff, feels really less important right now because the stakes are so high. There's so much happening right now, like so many gains that have been made being rolled back, so many direct attacks on so many of the communities that we are part of or allied with or in solidarity with, people that we love, that my ideal right now is that the places that are challenging interpersonally or interorganizationally are sort of like downgraded in terms of how much attention they get, because we really need to be together right now.
I have this question back home in Sudan and in African communities here as well. There is a mistrust of the British man, right? Just like the white man who came and colonized our land and killed us and took all our resources and left. And there's this feeling that I get sometimes. It's just like, we will never trust a British person. Until this day, if somebody gets married to somebody who's British, you know, the grandmothers and the grandparents are kind of like, you know, just like, she married, you know, the colonizer. And so I'm wondering, do you ever get a reaction which is, I can't trust a white person? I cannot trust white people. And what do you say to that?
Well, I think it's reasonable. I mean, those histories that you're talking about, they're not over. You know, the impacts of colonization is still playing out. Amends haven't been made. Reparations haven't been made. So if someone doesn't trust white people, to me, that feels like understandable. And I also don't take it personally because I'm not every white person.
That's
like, I'm not
hard though.
I mean,
is it hard to hear and to know that people don't trust you because you're white?
It's not. Well, I have a practice of learning not to take things personally because I'm a parent.
Mm-hmm.
so maybe that helps.
Yes.
But no, because I get it. I don't, I mean, I have, you know, you don't ever want to like compare different sets of oppression as though they're the same. But as a woman, I have some reasons not to trust men. You know, and I have plenty of healthy, vital, important relationships with men. And also, like, I don't automatically trust men. And I know that that's not about any individual. It's about the systems of oppression and about history and all these interlocking things. And so if someone doesn't trust me because I'm a white person, that has nothing to do with me, Rahula, who I am. It has to do with history. And again, like I said, that ongoing history, colonization is still happening, you know, and the impacts of colonization are still landing on people's bodies.
And slavery and Jim Crow. And...
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I mean, it seems perfectly reasonable to me. And then for people who can trust white people, like, I think that that comes from like showing up, being accountable, being responsive to relationships, and again, not being personally insulted when someone has been impacted by systems of oppression and it has impacted how they view you, a white person.
Mm-hmm. Are you optimistic that enough people will eventually see what you see?
I tend to be optimistic, yeah. I kind of think that humanity is infinitely creative. I actually was having this conversation with my daughter recently about climate change, mm-hmm. where she's like, you know, there's no hope, which is not what you want to hear from a teenager.
Mm.
Like, actually, we haven't started trying yet. You know, like we, like the massive bulk of our resources are not towards addressing climate change, are not towards addressing systemic inequalities and systemic power oppression. And so I do have hope that if we can flip the balance to where we actually start trying to do that, we can do it. It's just the struggle to get to the point where we flip the balance is a long slog. And it's been going on for hundreds of years, and I'm not sure how much longer. But yeah, I think that there is, I don't know how far in the future.
Because you have a child?
Yeah.
Are you optimistic that her generation will be in a much, much better place than we are right now?
You know,
does it look like that? Does it
sound
like that?
Before the election, I would have said an unequivocal yes, because the kids are amazing. You know, she's in high school, and like she and her friends like understand terms that I didn't learn till I was in my 30s, like terms like, you know, white privilege or like all kinds of, they're like so gender expansive, and they're so just kind of like, they have this very like egalitarian approach and a very like all identities are valid kind mm-hmm. of approach that's really sweet. And I'm sure it's not universal. We are in San Francisco, but it gives me a lot of hope that, oh, if you are raised with the idea that like you can push back against systems of oppression and you should push back against systems of oppression, that changes how you move in the world.
And do you think they're more aware of their privilege and that it will therefore be easier for them to connect with people of color and be in solidarity?
Maybe, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the Black Lives Matter movement has really, because it's been so successful and so widely known, like there aren't, at least in my daughter's school, there's not teenagers who don't know what BLM stands for. She was actually wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt to school today. And like people know what that's about. And they have conversations about it. And there's definitely some kids with the All Lives Matter line. But they're having those conversations. Mm-hmm. In a majority white, it's a multiracial, but it's still a majority white high school. They're talking about these things. And that gives me hope, you know, that they're already having those conversations. You know, and that they're talking about whiteness. The white kids are talking about like whiteness as a thing instead of like not even seeing it. And that's also hopeful.
So this has been great. I want to pretend like we're in one of your training sessions. Mm-hmm. And if you can just give me a little lesson. I don't know what.
Oh, jeez.
Pretend I'm a white person. And what, like, what's the first thing? Welcome to the training. Welcome to Catalyst Project.
That's really funny because the
throw
first thing we do...
Throw your white privilege out the window. Like, what do you do?
Well, the first thing we do is we talk about the culture we create. Because when you're in a day together or 4 days together or whatever it is, you set up group agreements and you set up like guidelines for how you're going to treat each other in the room. Mm. And that's a great opportunity to look at the ways that if we don't do that, then we just default to the dominant structure, which is like white guys do the most speaking, people with college educations get to say the most and, you know, get heard the most. And we default to the dominant oppressive systems unless we take an active step not to. Mm. And so just by setting our group agreements for how we're going to be in the space, we're talking about sexism, we're talking about ableism, we're talking about white supremacy.
Right from the get-go. Okay.
And it permeates into everything. So every exercise is like that. It's not always a, this is white supremacy, but it also is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.